we're going to talk some Browns right now. He said, what do you mean talking Browns? Yes, Browns. You know why? They got rookie minicamp starting this weekend in Berea, and we're also going to talk a little bit about the stadium situation with our good buddy, outstanding Browns beat reporter, also covers the Cavs and everybody basically for 92.3 The Fan, Browns Radio Network. Follow him on Twitter or Instagram at Right or Wrong Fan. He is Daryl Ryder. Daryl, thanks for making time for us. What is happening with rookie minicamp this weekend? Daryl, give us an idea of what goes on during this, what is it, three-day weekend that they bring him in for?
Yeah, and it's the least anticipated rookie minicamp in years because none of these guys are going to play this year. maybe Hall will see some time. But, yeah, I mean, they'll work out for 3 days. We're supposed to be out there tomorrow and Saturday. I'm skipping Saturday because the Cavaliers are playing. And, again, like I said, a lot of these guys aren't even seeing the field this year. They'll be on the practice squad. But, you know, they've got some camp invitees, some undrafted rookie free agents. It's not going to be a very large camp just because, again, the size of the rookie class is so small. And quite frankly, Kenny, there's just not a lot of roster positions that are up for grabs this year. Like, there just aren't a lot of jobs right now. This roster is you know, pretty much set on the, you know, the top 45.
So it's a good thing, right, that this is ho-hum this weekend, right, Daryl? You're telling me they've got a good chance of doing some damage this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is where you want to be. Like, yeah, sure, if you get one player out of your rookie class or something, you know, like your first-round pick, which obviously the Browns didn't have, but, like, yeah, I mean, you're usually not in great shape as a franchise if you're leaning on a rookie to – or rookies to carry the weight for your team going into a season.
Right.
So, you know, the Browns are where we've seen the Steelers be in roster building, where the Ravens have been and usually are in roster building, and some of the other successful teams, you know, like the Kansas Cities of the world and that. So, yeah, I mean, this is not going to be a year that's dominated by the hype surrounding its rookie class, and that's absolutely positive for the Browns.
Daryl, if the rookies are in camp now and OTAs in about 2 weeks, do you expect a lot of the starters to be there for OTAs, or do they just wait until mandatory in June?
Well, there's only one guy we need to see in OTAs. That's Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, just so we can see how he's throwing a football. So, you know, the off-season program is voluntary. Put that in air quotes. You want to wink, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the number one thing we're watching for this offseason is what Deshaun Watson looks like throwing a football, which he began to do last month.
Which is amazing, too, because you can look on anything and you can see video of Joe Burrow throwing a football. Have you seen Deshaun Watson throw a pass yet?
Not with my own two eyes.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know if there's any videos out there or whatnot, but we'll probably see that a little later this month.
Daryl, the general manager, was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. I'm just reading some quotes. And he's saying great things about Deshaun Watson, but I don't see any guarantee that they think he's going to be ready for the regular season. Maybe they hope he will be, but no guarantee at this point. What are your gut feelings telling you? You're Butch Davis on this one.
I think he plays week one.
You do? Okay.
Yes. Absolutely.
And the expectations then, coming off of an injured shoulder and everything like that, we should throw the injury out and expect him to ball out and be that guy that leads them to the playoffs. Is that fair or no?
Yeah, I don't know, Kenny. This is an injury that is very uncommon for NFL quarterbacks. And while the shoulder might physically and structurally be healed, I don't know. I mean, you know, the arm strength, has that returned, right? You know, how's that going to affect his mobility and willingness to run? And is he going to be smarter when he runs and duck out of bounds when he can and things like that? Because this offense has been retooled this offseason and they're installing it right now. That's what's going on behind the scenes. They're doing the installs, both classroom as well as on the field. We see the Browns putting a couple of clips out there on social media. The other day they put a clip of Jerry Jeudy catching a football. So, you know, they're doing all the install work, and Deshaun has given us a slight preview of what's to come, and that is just this offense apparently is going to give him some more freedom and latitude to play off schedule rather than the very regimented and structured offense that Kevin Stefanski and Alex Van Pelt had him under the last couple of years.
All right, here's the quote from Andrew Berry on the Pat McAfee Show. Players who are coming back from serious injuries, I don't think it's uncommon for there to be some transition or acclimation. That has to be in the realm of possibility. But we still feel really good about Deshaun. We like the trajectory that we've seen, and we really do think he's going to have a big year. So that's what they're saying now. So these OTAs that are coming up, Daryl, what do you expect from Deshaun Watson in these OTAs? Will we even see him there? And if we do, what do you think he will do?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be there. I expect that he's going to be there. I expect that he's going to participate. I don't know if he's going to be full participation, but, you know, my expectation is in a couple of weeks we'll get to see him throwing footballs. And, you know, we'll get an idea of what that looks like. But, you know, that quote from, you know, Andrew Berry just kind of sounds like all he's doing is tempering expectation and
yes,
not trying to build the situation up more than it, you know, needs to be, so that if Deshaun doesn't come out firing in week one, you know, people aren't jumping all over that. And again, this is a unique injury. So, again, structurally, everything is fine and healed and whatnot. But, you know, there's, you know, other parts of the shoulder that, you know, get involved and have to be re-strengthened and things like that. You just don't know what that's going to look like right now.
Speaking about not knowing what it's going to look like, what do you think the offense looks like under Ken Dorsey? I mean, we didn't know what Van Pelt's role was as offensive coordinator. Ken Dorsey now, and we don't even know with Stefanski, because under Flacco, he proves that his offense can throw for 300 yards. But then again, are we going to run a little bit more RPO because we've got a more mobile guy in Deshaun Watson? What do you expect, or what have you seen, I guess is even a better question, from a Ken Dorsey offense when he was up at Buffalo?
Well, I don't think the Buffalo offense is the one you need to look at.
Okay.
I think the offense you need to look at is the Cam Newton MVP season when the Carolina Panthers went to the Super Bowl and they lost to the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl 50. That's, I think, what the offense is going to look like. A lot of RPOs, a lot of off-schedule stuff. I think that the wide receivers are going to be given some latitude as well, which – it could be good, but also bad, because when you're, you know, trying to, if the receiver's allowed to make judgment calls when they're running their routes about where they're going to go, I think that lines some miscommunication up to happen. But those are components that, you know, are going to be in this offense. So it's going to be real interesting to see how this plays out. But yeah, you're going to see Deshaun Watson on the move, and you're going to see him and his receivers doing a little bit of freelancing out on the field, at least more so than we've seen under Alex Van Pelt and Kevin Stefanski.
So you put your GM hat on real quick, and had they been able to bring in Jerry Jeudy, because we all heard that they were trying to make a move and get him in here maybe a year or even longer ago, had they been able to get Jerry Jeudy, would Elijah Moore be on this team?
Last year?
Yep.
Probably not, because they were trying to get Jeudy for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that Barry has shown a propensity to do is to invest in wide receivers, and he feels like, just philosophically, and all you got to do is look at his history, right? He feels philosophically that the quickest, most effective way to fill those immediate needs is by trading for that position. And the top three players at that position have all been traded for, right? He traded for Amari Cooper with Dallas, took advantage of the Cowboys, not wanting to pay Cooper the $20 million a year. So you get him here. What's he do? Comes in you get a couple thousand yard seasons from him, first Browns receiver in history to ever do that. Then you, you know, you trade last year for Elijah Moore because they still needed help at that position. And then you go into this offseason, you're saying they still need help at receiver. So what does he do? He goes out and gets Jerry Jeudy, you know, quite frankly, a player that the Denver Broncos were looking to dump. The Browns went ahead and made Jeudy happy by giving him a contract extension that they feel will end up being very club friendly for them. Because their expectation is that Jeudy's going to outplay that contract, if you will. So, you know, you look at what Barry has done, and he likes trading for the receivers. Like, that's his thing. Just like he likes drafting them in the third and later rounds, right? Like, it's all about trading for those wide receivers. Early in the draft, he likes working in the trenches. He likes drafting offensive linemen, defensive linemen. The JOK linebacker there. So, you know, the nice thing of not changing the organization over and over again, in addition to the stability, is you can kind of see the patterns and where Andrew Berry likes investing his resources and how he goes about it. And he's been fairly consistent. Defensive line has always really been a patchwork, right? Let's be honest about it. In free agency, 1 and 2 year contracts for defensive linemen to fill those holes around Myles Garrett. You know, cornerbacks, they like drafting cornerbacks because they believe there's just no such thing as enough good cornerbacks. On the offensive side of the ball, he is all about offensive linemen. He's all about trading for wide receivers. So it's like you just can kind of see how Andrew Berry likes to put the roster together, and he's been very consistent in his approach.
Darryl Ryder is our guest, outstanding Browns beat reporter, 92.3 The Fan, Browns Radio Network. Follow him on Twitter, at Ryder Wrong Fan, as well as on Instagram. And Darryl, for people that want more of you after hearing you with us, where can they find your podcast, and what's the name of that podcast?
Oh, yeah, we got the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland podcast, myself and Andy Baskin. We got that up and running again last month, and we actually just recorded an episode earlier this afternoon, so... you can be on the lookout for that to drop in the next, 12 hours or so.
All right, look at him using the terminology that the kids are using these days. Well done, D. One last thing before we get to the stadium stuff. All right, D? I read a story today on ESPN+. Biggest remaining roster holes for all 32 teams, and they list each team. And their roster hole, they say, is cornerback depth, that after Ward, Emerson, and Newsom, there's a major drop-off and it's a major concern. Do you concur with that or no?
Well, I mean, I think you're really digging deep there, because I would say the top half of the Browns' corner depth chart is 1,000 times better than anyone in the NFL. So, like, if you're going to criticize the depth of the corner room, I really think you're finding something to nitpick there. Justin Hardy, I don't know, Cam Mitchell, who knows, Miles Harden, I guess, but like, you know, I would say that When you have Denzel Ward, MJ Emerson, and Greg Newsom, by the way, all of those are draft picks by the Browns. Mm-hmm. That's really, really, that's a really, you know, really good room.
Darryl, I'm sorry. Let me apologize for my partner, Kenny. What he meant to say was, do the Browns need DB help more than the Cavaliers need a 3-and-D guy?
No.
I agree
with
that.
We'll get to the Cavs here in a second.
I agree with that, too.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. You and I were chatting recently at a Cavaliers game, and you were talking about the stadium situation. For our listeners out there right now, D, that haven't read your article or heard you talk about it on the podcast, what is the latest from what you have gathered on the Brown Stadium search or the stadium deal or whatever's going on with it?
Well, right now they are pitching lawmakers at the state as well as local levels right now on two plans. One of them is a $1 to $1.2 billion with a B dollar renovation to the existing stadium on the lakefront. And then there is a possible dome that can be built in Brook Park right across the street from Hopkins Airport, where the old closed-down Ford plant used to be. That has all been cleared away by the existing property owners. They currently have a purchase agreement in place, an option to buy the land in place for 175-plus acres of land there. They can build a dome along with an entertainment district. For both projects, they are looking for a 50-50 public-private split. So for a renovation, you're talking $500 to $600 million in public funds with the team matching dollar for dollar. And then for a dome, you're talking $1.2 billion in public funds. Again, the team matching dollar for dollar, but also committing to an entertainment multi-use district around the stadium that would be privately funded and financed, so you can throw a couple $100 million on top of that. And while all that is going on, as if they don't have enough to deal with there, the team is also about to build a $200 million development right next to their training facility in Berea, Ohio. They acquired about 16 acres of land. They're looking for like $15 million in state money to help pay for a new rec center and community field for Berea. They want to build dorms for Baldwin Wallace, hotel space, obviously parking infrastructure, you know, maybe some housing as well, retail components, a sports medicine facility too. So, there, and by the way, the dome would also get a hotel or two, because the airport lost their hotel. That hotel is no longer operational at Hopkins. So,
oh, wow.
So that would fill. There is a need for hotel rooms around the airport, and the Haslams are working with developers to, you know, get that remedied as part of these projects. But yeah, there's a lot going on right now. It's very premature from people that I've talked to in Columbus, people I've talked to locally up here in Cleveland and Cuyahoga County. But the clock is ticking, and I have a feeling toward the end of the year, we're going to have an idea which plan the Browns will be pursuing in earnest, because they have to get this stuff, really, they got to get it all in place by at some point next year,
Daryl,
because they got to build it, and obviously construction takes a long time.
D, correct me if I'm wrong, the airport is in the city limits, but Brook Park is just right across the way?
It's right across, it's literally across the street, and here's the funny part of this. The land used to be City of Cleveland land, but years ago, Cleveland and Brook Park did a land swap, and where Cleveland got the IX Center and NASA Glenn and that, and then Brook Park got the Ford plant. Then, of course, as we know, Ford downsized some things, and you know, one of those plants ultimately ended up closing. So, and it became vacant land. So, and who could own the dome is up. You know, the people that I've talked to, the Browns are open to all possibilities. They don't seem crazy about the idea of them owning the dome. They, I think, want either the county or Brook Park or the state of Ohio to own the dome. They really want it to be a public facility, and I don't know how that's going to play. And the other, and this is a very complex thing, because there's always, and I learned this too. So you have State Route 237, which is between the railroad tracks and the airport, and on the other side of the railroad tracks, there is where the dome would go and the development. But there's another state route bordering this property, Engle Road, which is like 291 or something.
Okay,
I didn't even know Engle Road was a state route. So that's even more state infrastructure money that can go into the project. And oh, by the way, those construction figures I gave you don't include infrastructure costs. That is a whole separate can of worms there. So, but that space where it's the perfect spot to build a dome. Like, it really is the perfect spot. But again, they're going to have to find a way to get that divided up. And My understanding right now, they're asking that they're willing to pay 50%. Their initial proposal is that the state pays 25%, and then the local municipalities, county, city, all that stuff would pick up 25% as well. And my understanding is that same division of how it would be paid for, it's the same model for a renovation of Cleveland Browns Stadium. And I can tell you right now, the city of Cleveland cannot come up with 25% of $500 to $600 million, not when the school system's $150 million in the red and they're up here talking about doing a tax levy to pay for the schools.
But how much would they stand to lose if this thing goes to Brook Park then?
Well, but here's where the Cleveland makes it up. They can develop the lakefront land now the way it needs to be developed. The stadium
turn it into something else.
The stadium's in the way. The city spent a couple million dollars on stadium lakefront development plans. The Haslam spent money on lakefront development plans. Everyone agrees the lakefront needs developed. My personal opinion is the stadium's in the way of that. And even if the stadium stays and they develop the lakefront, if you think it's hard to get to now, it's choked off now. I'm going to tell you right. According to the plans that I've seen, the Muni lot would go away. And this is City of Cleveland. This isn't a Browns thing. The Muni lot goes away. The parking lot across from the stadium, bordering the lake, goes away. The West 3rd parking lot goes. All those tailgating lots go away and become development. And those are major congregation areas for Browns fans, right? So, you know, for the fans who are like, oh, my God, if they go to Brook Park, we're going to lose our Muni lot. We're going to lose our tailgating. No, actually, you got a better chance of keeping your tailgating if they go to Brook Park, because in Cleveland, all your parking spaces are going to be turned into parking garages.
If the property hasn't been bought in Brook Park, is there another location they might move to in the city limits and get off
the
lake?
There is nowhere to build in Cleveland.
Nowhere. Okay.
Like they have been researching. I know one of the city councilmen up here floated the idea of moving the post office out to Brook Park on this land. And then, you know, building, and that's obviously south of Gateway Progressive Field and Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on the other side of the Interbell. Here's the problem. There's no room to do anything around it. The Browns want development around the stadium, and they want parking revenue. And they're not going to get that in Cleveland. And that's why I'm telling you, I feel like, although they're not saying it because they're pitching both plans, they're giving lawmakers, here's behind door number one, here's what's behind door number two. But I really think if the Haslams have their choice and they get what they want out of this, it's going to be a dome in Brook Park.
All right. You're not going to get that info anywhere else. That's why we love having Daryl on with us. Daryl, do the Cavaliers have any chance of beating the Celtics in a seven-game series?
Here's some news for you. Brad Daugherty was on our afternoon show this afternoon.
Yeah.
And he told them that Evan Mobley's been playing through a bad ankle sprain. Here's the quote that our executive producer of the afternoon show put on Max. Quote, I don't think we're giving him enough credit for what he's doing. I mean, his ankle is badly sprained, and he's not complained. He's just trying to play through it. I give him a ton of credit for being selfless. Now, this, I wish I would have known this, because I was ripping him after Sunday night's game. I was ripping Darius Garland, who once again got smacked in the face. After Tuesday's game, Donovan Mitchell in the third quarter looked completely spent and exhausted and just emotionally and physically drained in that third quarter. It reminded me, Kenny, of, I think it was 2010 against the Celtics, where LeBron on five Boston Celtics, right? It feels the same way right now with the Cavs and the Celtics. So I think I just want the Cavs to make it competitive. Don't get blown out by 25 tonight. Don't get swept. Win one or two games in this series, make the Celtics work for it. I think Boston wins the East. I think that they've got a very good chance to win the NBA championship. I think Minnesota and Oklahoma City are going to have something to say about that. But, we're seeing the Cavs, they don't have Dean Wade. Jared Allen isn't available. And I don't think he's going to be available. This rib injury is pretty severe if he can't get his hands over his head, and it hurts when he breathes and all that kind of stuff. And we're a week into that. And then, of course, now we find out that Evan Mobley is banged up. And so I think it's going to be real tough for the Cavs to win this series, Kenny.
Daryl, great stuff as always. Thanks for joining us on short notice. We always appreciate it. Keep up the fantastic work, all right, bud?
All right, guys. Thanks for having me as always.